Welcome to my Soul Series. Soul Series is part of Oprah and Friends, exclusively on XM Radio Channel 156. And you can listen to the entire Soul Series collection on xmradio.com/Oprah. It's uplifting, enlightening, truly powerful. Welcome to Soul Series. Welcome back to Soul Series. Welcome back. It's another week. I'm in the same outfit because we didn't go anywhere. We're just continuing our conversation, joined again by the rector of the All Saints Church in Pasadena, California, Reverend Ed Bacon. Reverend Ed's other title at that church, as I said in our last episode, is Chief Spiritual Officer. Don't you like that? So I'd love to get your take on a seeming spiritual convergence that's happening on a global level. We talked last week about the difference between spirituality and religion. And I forgot to ask you this question, though. You can be religious without being spiritual.
Indeed.
Can you be spiritual and not be religious?
Yes.
You can be both?
Yes.
So they don't have to converge?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I say that because there's wonderful people who have spiritual experiences on their horses
right
on Sunday morning,
uh-huh.
and they just are not going to bother with this religious stuff for a lot of very good reasons, and some are lazy reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Let's respect everybody exactly where they are, and let's let grace lead them where grace needs to lead them.
You don't want everybody to be in church on Sunday?
No, I don't.
Wow, what kind of preacher are you?
I want everybody to know God.
You want everybody to know God?
I want everybody to know the love that I know, that fills their hearts so much that they are joyful and peaceful, and they are respectful of every human being. What I want, Oprah, is to turn the human race into the human family.
Wow.
And you don't have to be in church to be
that.
A part of that. Because Gandhi was not in church, and he did that. There are a lot of folks outside the Christianity who do that.
Okay. So coming to church does what for us then?
Coming to church is
wherever
about
two or three are gathered in my name?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's what Jesus said? Yes.
That's exactly what Jesus said.
I don't want somebody saying, now Oprah's saying it. I know, you know, I've been accused of trying to have my own church.
That's exactly what Jesus said.
Jesus
You're quoting
said
Jesus
that.
Today.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I pray silently an hour every morning before I go into the world. Sometimes I also pray in silence with other people.
Mm-hmm.
The experience of grace, of church, of knowing God's love happens so much faster when I'm with other people. It happens faster than when I'm by myself.
Why? Because of the energy field there?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. There's an energy field that is present.
There's no doubt about it. There's a force field.
There's a force field.
Going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's as powerful and as real as electric force fields.
Yes. We had Larry Darcy on talking about the power of prayer. Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's real. And that's why Jesus said this eternal truth, that mm-hmm. when two or three are gathered together in my name, there I am in the midst of them. Now, if you can take that in a non-literal way and understand that God was speaking through Jesus at that point,
mm-hmm.
then it is important for people to gather.
Okay, so many times during this New Earth broadcast, there were people who would send me emails saying, Oprah, don't you know Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the light. And when I said, yeah, indeed, obviously, I acknowledge that is what Jesus said. Do you believe, as the rector of the All Saints Church, do you believe that when Jesus said that he meant he was the only way?
No. I believe Jesus was talking about the Christness, the God power inside him,
mm-hmm.
and that no one kind of comes to this Godness without grace made tangible.
Yeah.
And that's what Jesus was talking
about.
So
is that what you believe he meant when he said nobody comes this way to
Precisely.
The Father except by me?
Right. The me there, the antecedent of me there, is this spirit power, is this grace, is this desire to make love tangible.
Mm-hmm.
That's how people get to God,
mm-hmm.
is because they want to go on the journey of love made tangible. And that's what it's all about. But that applies to people who've never heard of Jesus, people who've heard Jesus in bad ways, mm-hmm. people who've been abused by folks who beat them over the head with Jesus.
Use the name of Jesus to abuse.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And people of other religions. Exactly. I do a lot of interfaith work. Right after 9/11, a group of us in Los Angeles gathered together at a mosque to pray. An imam said something that really changed my life. He said, to be religious in the 21st century is to be inter-religious. Now, I believe that. Soon after that, I was in the pulpit, and I asked my congregation to raise their hands if they had a partner, intimate friend, family member who were of another religion. 90% of the people in that congregation raised their hand that day.
Oh, well, you have a very different kind of church then, don't you think?
I think that it's I think the phenomenon of globalization is such that the world is getting smaller.
Well, those are not the people that are sending me emails.
I understand. No, that's right. No. You're right about that.
No.
You're right about it. However, my hunch is that those folks have a much... I'm wondering if those people don't have a challenged life religiously already, and you were the flashpoint of the challenges that they're living with every day.
I don't think so. I think a lot of people just believe what they believe, and anything that deviates in any way or goes deeper or tries to ask people to think about another way of looking at things, I think that just really threatens people.
Well, there's no doubt of it.
Yeah.
There's no doubt of it.
Yeah. I understand you have an atheist in your church who comes regularly. Why would an atheist come to church?
This person hasn't made herself known to me. She sent me an anonymous note and said, I come to your church, don't belong to your church, but if I believed in God, I would belong to your church. I think the explanation, however, is found in a conversation I did have with a woman who's Jewish who comes to the church. We have Jews, Buddhists, Hindus who come to the church, as well as Christians. But this Jewish worshiper said, I just thought that I should tell you something, that I'm a Jew, and I come here, and my psychiatrist told me that I should come to your church. I said, oh, really? She says, yes. She says, he said to me, you won't have to stop being a Jew, but what's going on there, you need. And every time that guy, Bacon, says the word Jesus, you just bracket that. You don't listen to that. You just listen to what he says about God. Now, that's, I think, going on in our world today. We are so tired of bloodshed and war. We are so tired of disparaging other people because of the way God made them that we want to find a way that will bring us together. Thomas Merton is the man who turned everything on for me. A monk, Roman Catholic monk, died in 1968 in Thailand. After he had been a monk for 15 years, he was walking on the streets of Louisville, and he had an epiphany. And all of a sudden he said, all of these people are me, and I am them. They are mine. I am them. And this isolation that Christianity has been teaching all along is false. We are not called to be isolated from one another. We are called to be united with one another.
Do you call yourself a Christian?
Yes.
Yeah.
I call myself a follower of Jesus. Jesus is my man. I think Jesus did it, knew it, embodied it.
And if Jesus... the Jesus that we have been, that we have been taught to believe in, the Jesus that the Bible speaks of, if that Jesus were to come to earth today in the same characterization as he was 2,000 years ago, 2,000 odd years ago, what do you think would happen? He'd be ridiculed and attacked as the Antichrist.
Absolutely.
Why? Because people couldn't hear it.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Because he would say, the homeless person on the street, the Iraqi mother who just lost her child, the man in Iran you're thinking of bombing, the gay and lesbian person you're excluding. They all have the kingdom of God within them. God is in them, and they're just as valuable.
They're as just you think as, you are.
Exactly.
Yes. And as you are.
That's right.
Yes.
And they're just as advantaged before God
mm-hmm.
as you are.
Mm-hmm.
Gandhi talked about the democracy of souls.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus lived that out. Every soul is of equal worth. Jesus said one of the most radical things. Now see, this Jesus doesn't get preached a lot. But in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, God makes his rain to fall on the just and the unjust alike, and God makes the sun to shine on the good as well as the evil. God's grace is democratic. It's equal. And we want to say, my tribe, my group, the people who think the way I do, the people who feel the way I do,
mm-hmm.
we've got a leg up mm-hmm. on everybody else. And as soon as I put myself with a leg up over some other group, that's the first step
mm-hmm.
toward abusing those people or excluding them or maybe even bombing them.
And the leg up is your ego.
Exactly.
The leg up over the other person is your ego saying, I am better. My religion is better. My way is better.
Which is the evil one
yes.
finding
yes.
a place
uh-huh.
in my life.
Now, you told us in our previous conversation last week that you were 5 years old in the Pine Woods and the voice of God came to you and that it was like a feeling. And that was the moment for you. Were you transformed in that moment? Did you know in that moment that you were going to grow up and be a
I had no idea.
A
you
minister?
Know, I think the best way to describe it was the presence came
the presence,
to me instead of I heard a voice.
Yeah.
Oh, no. It took me years to unpack what that meant. And I'm still unpacking it. I mean, life is a journey.
Yes,
right?
Of course.
And none of us has arrived.
Okay, so not a voice, a presence. You
it
said this warm embrace.
And it was light.
Of light and love, this feeling of
and security.
I am loved.
I'm totally secure, and this can't be taken away. Now, the issue is...
Oh, I have felt that.
Okay.
I have felt
All
that.
Right.
I have
All
felt
right.
that. I've felt that many times.
Yes.
I've felt that many times. Well,
that's what I call a glory attack.
A glory attack.
Yeah.
Really. I have felt that many, many times. Cannot feel it, though, unless, which is what Eckhart Tolle is saying in A New Earth, you cannot have that feeling or knowingness of presence unless you get still enough for it to happen. You have to quiet the mind in order for that to happen. But I've had it when I wasn't even trying to quiet the mind, because oftentimes if I, you know, go into the woods, which I have a woods near my home, go into the woods, you're kind of seeking it. It often doesn't come for me when I'm seeking it, but it comes in just... Well, it always comes at the right time.
Well, that's see, that's sure. the graceful aspect of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's the grace that you're talking
that
about.
That is,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
That feeling that I am loved and no matter what, I'm going to be all right. And that everything is all right.
Because my creator
yes.
and the creator of everyone else and the creator of the entire cosmos loves me.
That's right.
I mean, that whole notion.
What a powerful thing.
His eyes on the sparrow.
His eyes on the sparrow.
And I know he watches me.
Yes.
And every hair of our head is counted. That every human being is that precious to
mm-hmm.
God, to the creator of the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's bigger than this white bearded guy, you know, we picture as God.
Mm-hmm.
This is this.
Yes. Well, when I grew up, I thought it was white bearded taking roll call. Because
right.
that's the way it had been described to me. And so as I have grown in grace... for me, the spirituality is also coming to the recognition that God is, as Paul says, in me, above me, around me, through me,
Absolutely.
Everywhere and in all things.
Indeed.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes.
And in every other human being. And to seek God in someone who's doing you harm is the test of spirituality, it seems to me. If in
well,
that
I haven't gotten that far.
I haven't either.
Okay.
Okay.
So I was
going to
say,
today.
No, this is good. This is really
We're
good.
Confessing
Reverend
today.
Yes, from the All Saints Church I'm talking to. Now, I'm really good at seeing, listen, I am with you on the oneness. We're all the same. I can see God in all races, all people. I'm there. It's hard for me to see it in the people who are attacking
me
or other people. It's hard. That's where it gets very hard.
Right, I would invoke Eckhart and Jesus again.
Okay.
Jesus says, pray for your enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Love your enemies. Eckhart says, you have to practice being that observer of yourself.
Yes.
So to be able to, now this is spiritual maturity that I have not.
Yeah, it's a level of spiritual maturity I have not yet acquired.
Yeah, I'm wanting it.
Yes.
I'm praying for it.
Yeah.
But in the midst of the battle.
In the midst of the battle.
When somebody is taking you down and it's an ad hominem to the person attack.
Uh-huh.
For at that moment.
At that moment.
To be able to step back and observe that and say, look at that person attacking me. Am I going to choose not to retaliate or to give in kind, but am I going to choose something bigger than they?
Mm-hmm. Or am I going to get mad?
Or, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is to give them your power.
To give them your power. Oh, getting mad is giving them my power.
No, but to lose yourself in madness so that you don't have that voice and you don't have that consciousness and that awareness, you have fallen asleep. If you want to, if you want your dreams to come true, you have to wake up. Wakeness, awareness is huge in this. And you can fall asleep in the midst of retaliation.
Because you get so caught up in it. So caught up in, I'm going to get him, and I can't believe he did that to me, and I'll show them, and who they think they are. All of that.
All of that. There's a great Christian hymn.
And when you find yourself in that space, it means you've lost. You have now fallen asleep.
The ego
has
taken over.
Okay.
The ego's
landed. And you are spiritually deadened.
But never without the possibility of resurrection, just like that.
Okay.
Because grace can come in and say, wake up now.
Okay. So when you, this is really good.
Because we have to interrupt the cycle of violence, see?
Yes.
And when, as long as we are doing tit for tat, then we are, as Dr. King said, violence leads to violence.
Absolutely.
Hatred leads to hatred.
But I'm just trying to apply it to practical everyday living.
Exactly.
So when we find ourselves in that moment of, I can't believe, and I'm furious, and I, all
how
of that.
They?
The thing to do is to take a breath.
Exactly.
Yeah. And step back and observe, because this now could be your holiest moment.
Exactly.
One of your holiest moments.
Rabbi Heschel said, in every moment, something sacred is at stake. And even in that moment of being attacked, something sacred is at stake. Can I choose or be awake or aware enough to see that going on and to say, I need an imaginative, creative, loving response that keeps my power rather than give it over to that person and just act the way they want me to act.
So, because when I become angry, I've engaged in giving away my power.
Precisely.
All right. Okay.
I mean, anger has its place. I think there's something called righteous indignation.
Yes.
Okay? But I'm talking, you and I are talking right now.
We're talking about giving yourself over to it so that you become consumed by it and you're lost in it. And the thing, it's the story that Eckhart tells in the book of the two monks walking along the road, and one monk picks up the woman and carries her across the road, and the other monk 5 hours later says, why did you touch that woman? We're not supposed to notice women. And he says, I put the woman down 5 hours ago and you're still carrying her. So that thing where you're still carrying it. Yes. Days and months and years later, you're still ticked off because somebody did or said something.
Or somebody 20 years ago,
a
priest kicked their dog,
right?
And here I come into their life and I remind them of the priest.
You're wearing the collar, so you're just like them.
You got this old wound that they are reactivating, and it's somehow giving them some kind of payoff. That's not what freedom is. I mean, Jesus, God, wants us to be free. For freedom, you have been set free. So don't give yourself back over to slavery.
Well, do you think something's happening globally, spiritually? Because there was, this past year alone in September, the Washington Post ran a front page story about the mystery of consciousness entitled, What Makes Up My Mind? In December, there was a cover story of Time magazine. They asked the question, what makes us good and evil? And the New York Times Magazine asked the same question, the moral instinct, what makes us good. Earlier this summer, I was just, you know, flipping through the channels, and I saw a promo, NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, in which they were doing a segment on mind, body, spirit. I went, well, mind, body, spirit, which, you know, in 1995, I had to stop the audience because they didn't know what we were talking about, is now a part of the evening newscast, you know? Is something going on?
Yes.
What's going on?
Well, Eckhart, interestingly enough, talked about what happened in the Vietnam, in around that era.
Yes.
With all the hippies.
Yes.
And then that waned.
Right.
And it left a vacuum, and what came into it was an appreciation of Eastern religion.
Right.
Yoga, etc.
That the hippies helped us get to that
precisely.
Point. That was a part of the evolutionary process
exactly.
for us.
This person I referred to earlier, Thomas mm-hmm. Merton, when I met the Dalai Lama, we named our son after Thomas Merton, Peter Merton Bacon, and I asked the Dalai Lama, because they were friends, about him, and after joking around, he's mm-hmm. such a bubbly, wonderful guy, he said, it was a tragedy. We lost a bridge between East and West.
Mm.
So historically, and in terms of evolution, there did occur this bridge between East and West, and you can't have the East coming into the West without integrating mind, body, spirit. There's so much science that's coming out showing what we intuitively know,
yeah.
that if we let toxic thoughts and feelings into our body, it's going to somatize, it's going to express itself.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I was watching the, you know, we're all into the Olympics.
Yeah.
And watching the Olympics, was that not a spiritual opening? Did that not hit a spiritual nerve?
Absolutely.
For all of us, because watching that opening, I think for every person, touched a part of you that made you feel it expanded you. That's what they did. It made you feel more expansive,
yeah.
and that although you were going to walk on air and
right.
you're not going to pole vault and you're not going to, you know,
right.
you're not going to be a Michael Phelps, but that you could be a little better.
That's correct.
That you could just be a little better.
Well, the universe is expanding.
Expanding.
I mean, scientifically, the Hubble telescope showed us what Einstein had posited, and that is that the universe actually is expanding.
Is expanding.
It is not contracting. And the human consciousness and the human soul and the human community also are expanding.
Well, interesting thing. I was watching the synchronized diving, and of course the Chinese one, as
right.
we all know, and they had those two Chinese mm-hmm. girls that actually looked alike, so I thought that's a good strategy next year. Everybody cut your hair the same, be the same height. But also there was something about the Chinese synchronized diving, which I saw, and the commentator was talking about how the judging of the synchronized diving, that you have to become as one, that every movement, every breath is the same. And I was thinking, they are going to win this because this is a country that practices Tai Chi, where the whole country practices Tai Chi. And the idea of being of one isn't a foreign concept to them. So they've been raised from the time they were, you know, little babies to know how to do that. And so when they stand up there on that, they know how to bring into alignment with another human being.
And that's the beauty of yoga.
Yes.
Is that you concentrate on your breath.
Yes.
And the idea is for all of us who are in the same room practicing yoga to be breathing slow, non-reactive, breathing through your nose. And if your breath starts to get too fast, don't continue the exercises. Put your knees on the mat.
What we're supposed to do?
That's why people hurt themselves in yoga.
That is right.
By continuing to do that instead of focusing on the breath.
I know. I did a yoga class with my best friend, Gail, and afterwards she says, I don't like yoga. And I said, well, really? What part don't you like? She goes, the bending, the stretching, the breathing part. Well, that would be all of it.
Well, my yoga teacher taught me about, we were
yeah.
talking about this anger thing.
Yes.
Caught, he says, you are so wrong if you think that yoga is about what's going on in this room, about bending, stretching, breathing, sweating
yes.
on this yoga mat. Yoga is about whether or not you can keep this breath, slow, non-reactive breathing through your nose, when somebody flips you off on the freeway in L.A.
Oh.
And you keep that breath. and you don't fall into that. Because there's a great Christian hymn about, may we not become the evil we deplore.
Yes, yes.
You know, when we hate evil so much that we become
evil. We become that. In the hating of it, you become it.
Which is what Dr. King was saying mm-hmm. over and over and over again. You know, thank God he came into my life. I was 17 when I met him. And he said that racism and bigotry and oppression have two victims. Not just the person who's on the short end of the stick, but the oppressor is being victimized also. Because evil hurts both the perpetrator and the victim. And that's why it's important for us to keep this unifying breath. If we could have this unifying breath throughout the world, like we saw in the Olympics,
yes.
The breath of grace,
yes.
The breath of love,
mm-hmm.
The breath of forgiveness,
mm-hmm.
Then we can turn the human race into the human family.
Speaking of breath, do you espouse meditation in your church? And is that a way to get closer to grace by following the breath?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at least once a year or twice a year, I will preach on that. And then we have an education time between the services at 10:15 called the Rector's Forum. And every year I talk about that. And I talk about my own prayer life. I make it very...
Do you pray every day?
Every day.
Many times a day?
Oh, yeah. My major time is 45 to 90 minutes before I go out into the world.
You pray for 90 minutes?
Sometimes I do. Martin Luther, the great reformer in the 15th century, said, I'm going to be very busy today, so I'm going to have to pray another extra hour.
Wow.
The more challenge I'm in,
mm-hmm.
The busier I am, the more I pray. Or I'm going to get caught up in that anger thought thing or lose myself.
And what do you pray when you pray?
It's got three chapters to it. I mentioned the basin of silty water.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I sit there with my very silty water
mm-hmm.
in the basin.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the longest chapter of the, let's say an hour.
Mm-hmm.
That's the longest chapter. Maybe 35, 40 minutes. And that's why people oftentimes just give up on this prayer stuff, because they say, oh, I'm so distracted. I'm having all these thoughts, and I'm having to process my dream from last night, and all the.
So you're sitting. Are you meditating?
Yes.
Yeah, just being with yourself.
Just being still.
Yeah, not calling it a big woo.
No.
Just sitting with yourself.
Just sitting. My favorite prayer chair. And then.
Well, you have a prayer chair. I'm going to get me one. Okay. Good. I don't have that.
It's just a nice, comfortable armchair.
A prayer chair. Okay, good.
With an ottoman.
Yeah.
You know?
A place where you pray regularly.
Every day.
So then I would like that. You know why? Because then it takes on the energy of prayer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I have this quilt that's, not this quilt, but this thing that some
Afghan
people in the church.
Like
that's been knitted by the people. Mm-hmm. We have a prayer ministry that knits shawls.
Mm-hmm.
I'll send you one.
Good.
I'd like for Oprah
I'll
Winfrey
have
to have a prayer shawl
too.
From All Saints. Anyway, so. I sit there and the silt goes to the bottom of the basin. And all of a sudden, I feel this kind of cool, blue menthol kind of feeling. If you've ever smoked menthol cigarettes, you remember well.
No, I never smoked.
Okay.
That's one good thing
for you.
Going for me, yeah.
I gave up long ago. But there's this, you can imagine.
Okay, so you have a menthol feeling.
Kind of blue, cool, and that's the grace. That's love. And then, Oprah, immediately I start praying for people. People come into my mind who've been asking me to pray for them, people in the hospital, people going through divorce, people who are struggling in life, people I wouldn't think of praying for.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it's not my mind doing this. This is more even than my consciousness. This is God. Mm-hmm. I call it the Spirit,
mm-hmm.
God's Spirit. Asking me to pray. And sometimes I feel their bodies come into me. I hope you don't mind my time this mystically, but and it's just amazing. And
I love mystical talk.
And I call them and I say, I was praying for you this morning. What? of all days.
Because I was going through this and that, and yeah.
And that's the spirit connecting us all. That's those Chinese synchronized divers. I mean, here I am, this country preacher, and somebody else over there, and the spirit has connected us because I chose to give it 60 minutes to stay there to let it happen.
Wow.
So my prayer is not about, okay, Lord, I need this and I need that.
Yeah.
This is God saying, Ed, I need this from you. And I think that's what real prayer is. Instead of my bringing all my needs to God, I sit until I can be still enough for God to bring God's needs through me.
Yeah. Well, that's my prayer constantly. My prayer is always, God, how would you use me?
That's it.
I want to be used for something greater than myself.
When you say, I'm ready to be an instrument.
Yes.
You're in business.
You're in business. It's been great sharing these two conversations with you. I could talk all night, you know. Now, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was great. I hope you enjoyed this edition of our Soul Series. These are some of my favorite conversations.
To hear more, sign up for a free 30-day XM Radio trial by going to www.xmradio.com/Oprah.